It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. One in four adults, that's over 60 million Americans, experiences mental illness in a given year. One in 17 of us, over 13 million, live with a serious mental illness, such as schizophrenia, major depression, or bipolar disorder. And it's estimated that serious mental illness costs the U.S. some $200 billion in lost earnings every year. In this first half hour, we want to talk with two Iowans who have unique perspectives on mental health and mental health care and who are trying to change attitudes about it. Joan Becker is the mother of Mark Becker. In 2009, Mark Becker, who suffers from psychosis, shot and killed Applington Parkersburg High School football coach Ed Thomas. Mark Becker was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison for the crime. Since Thomas's death and Mark Becker's imprisonment, Joan Becker has become a mental health advocate. She's regularly spoken to community groups about the deficiencies in Iowa's mental health care system. And Joan Becker will be giving a talk tonight about her family's journey with mental illness at 6:30 at the Ankeny United Methodist Church in Ankeny. Joan Becker, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Pat George is also with us. Pat George is co-director of the Mental Health Ministries at Ankeny United Methodist Church. She's part of an effort at that church to integrate more mental health into their ministry. Pat George, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Joan, let's start with you. Less than a day before the murder, your son, Mark, had been released from a psychiatric ward in Waterloo. Tell us a little bit about Mark and his history of mental illness before the shooting.
Well, what happened is Mark had been experiencing some very severe psychotic episodes 9 to 12 months prior to that tragic day. And a couple years even before that, we were noticing a deterioration in his health, his mental health. We didn't know what to attribute it to. We didn't know if it was depression. We didn't know what exactly it was. And we were having some serious difficulties getting him directed to the right place to try and get a proper diagnosis so that we could get him on medication.
What symptoms was he exhibiting? You talked about experiencing psychosis. What was he hallucinating or hearing things? Or
yes, he was. It was like he would be in the room and he would be talking to someone that wasn't there. He could get very, very, during the severe episodes, he'd get very physical. He'd get very vocal. His facial features would change. His voice even sounded different. And he was really, he believed he was being attacked. And he begged for help for the attacks to stop. And so it was a very difficult thing as parents. We were not educated. We did not understand what was happening. And although we tried to ask people for help, we could not get directed to someone who could help us understand what was going on with our son.
Did you get him into your primary care physician to be referred?
We did start with the primary care physician, but he was just working with Mark on an individual basis. When it got to be more severe, we finally ended up having to call our local sheriff department to come and assist us because it was becoming so physical. That resulted in a commitment to a mental health ward at a hospital in northern Iowa. And so that started the whole process, that there were a lot of different pieces of people working with Mark as far as the mental health ward, and then the local CPC, the Central Point Coordinator, was helping to coordinate services with a service provider. But what we found was happening is, number one, we as a family who were experiencing these severe episodes and could explain what was going on with Mark were not included in any of the treatment or in any of the counseling sessions so that we could explain everything going on. So what happens is you have all of these individual pieces. You have your sheriff department. You have your medical provider. You have service providers. You have the judicial side that actually had a court order for Mark to have medication and counseling. But when you have all these individual pieces and they're not communicating with each other, you have such a broken, disjointed system that does not accomplish what that individual's needs are. Unfortunately, had we had a program in place that was based, a treatment program, a holistic treatment program based on an individual's needs, on where they were at with their diagnosis or with their medication or their stability, just think if we would have had communication like that, how different our son's outcome might have been.
Mm-hmm. So it's not that the services were not available there. It's that they were not working in concert and that you and your husband and the rest of the family was not included in trying to regain Mark's mental health.
That is absolutely correct. Mm.
Tell us what it was like for you, if you could, for you and your family, in the immediate aftermath of the shooting. I know I'm bringing you back to a painful period, but it is hard for us to imagine how a family copes, how you were treated in the community, how the questions you had in the immediate aftermath of your son shooting the football coach.
Certainly. What was probably the most difficult thing for our family is when this shooting occurred, we knew it came on the heels of months and years of anguish and torment for our son and the illness he was going through. But the public didn't know that piece of it. Because of the stigma of mental illness, including ourselves, we didn't talk about this with people. Very few people knew the struggles that our family was going through. So that made it very difficult for us in the aftermath, because we knew all of the rest of the story, if you will, but until after the trial was done, we were not going to speak publicly about that. However, our church community and our local communities rallied together, and they supported our family, even despite what had happened. So
did that happen from day one?
That happened from day one. Literally, the first night we could not stay in our home because it was full of detectives. The next morning we came back, we started getting visitors that morning, and that went on for weeks and months to come.
What did they have to say?
They reached out, they hugged us, they cried with us. And they knew Mark was a good man. They knew he was a good guy. They wanted to know more. I think they wanted to try to get some understanding of why, how this could have happened. Mm-hmm. And they just, like I said, the community and the church family, they knew our family. They knew our son. So they knew there had to be more to it than what was meeting the eye.
What is your understanding of what Mark thought he was doing when he went to the high school and shot and killed Ed Thomas?
It's very clear to us. Mark believed that God commanded him to shoot Ed and Dave, my husband, and myself, because we were poisoning the minds of the children in our community, and he was directed to try and save those children. That was the point he was trying to take care of that day.
Let me turn to Pat George, co-director of Mental Health Ministries at Ankeny United Methodist Church. Pat George here with Joan Becker, if you've just joined us. Pat, you're having Joan speak in your ministry tonight. You're part of an effort there to integrate more mental health into the ministry. What sparked this move to do that? What need did you feel was unmet?
It was brought to our attention that we were needing to address this need for a myriad of people in the congregation who didn't feel comfortable in terms of being open about the pain they were going through, in terms personally or with family members who were being troubled with mental illness.
So you found that, and I said the statistics at the beginning, over 60 million adult Americans experiencing mental illness in a given year. So there, in any congregation and in yours, there are a certain number of people experiencing some real mental illness, perhaps serious, perhaps less serious, but there was just not an avenue that you saw that your ministry could address
that? We've been very well received in people who had not felt comfortable sharing this piece of their life, that as we open up and say, hey, this is, you're not unusual, God loves you, there is, this is something we can help you walk through together, we've gotten a wonderful response to that message.
So what types of specific things have you done in your ministry to better integrate mental health?
One is just an awareness of the fact that there are people here that they can come to. We do have goals and purposes. The first is to increase awareness of mental illness in our community. The next is to encourage more mental health services to be available in Ankeny because it's a problem for some people that they either have to go to Des Moines or West Des Moines for services, and we're getting more services here in the area. Our committee's been very active in trying to have educational meetings to destigmatize mental illness, and that's one of the reasons why we invited Joan tonight.
Mm-hmm. So the stigma is a big problem. You hear that again and again. I'm wondering, in a church setting, we often have a time when people share their pains and their joys in a service, and it's not infrequent that someone will talk about a heart attack or a cancer or something like that. Will you have people opening up and perhaps sharing mental illness woes?
Well, I don't know that I see that happening too much, but hopefully
would that be a hope, though?
Yes, yes.
That you can treat it like any other physical illness.
Yes, yes, and that it would be considered a chronic illness, just like diabetes and anything else, migraine, headaches, et cetera, that we would normally be more receptive to hear about.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind me asking if mental illness has touched your family?
No. My daughter, who had graduated from college, came down with a severe bipolar episode, mm-hmm. and that was 16 years ago. Took 8 years to get everything in place to regain her life, and she's quite open about that and would not be embarrassed if I mentioned it.
Mm-hmm. So your thoughts on how you would ideally like the church to work with mental health services?
I would like to get people informed, first of all, on how to respond so that they aren't scared. If someone would mention that they're going through this sort of personal crisis, I would like to have them feel comfortable just wrapping their arms around a person, for instance, and just saying, I love you, I care about you, rather than just kind of averting their eyes and mumbling something and walking away.
Mm-hmm. What do you find is, Pat George, some unproductive ways of thinking about it? Are there perhaps ways of thinking about it where people might view mental illness as something that someone could pull themselves up by their bootstraps, or perhaps it's their fault that they're thinking this way?
Well, we see that kind of attitude both inside and outside of the church, and we also sometimes see some blame in terms of maybe you aren't spiritual enough, or maybe you aren't being a good enough parent to your child. I've certainly heard that. So, yes, there are non-productive ways of thinking about mental illness. I think that there's a lot of progress being made this past decade in terms of understanding that, indeed, there is a biochemical, a genetic predisposition to certain diseases.
Joan Becker, do you see that awareness raising happening in the short time that you've been a mental health advocate?
What I have seen is people have been much more open to just come up and ask me questions on the street if they see me, in the community, in the church. And I think it's a good thing. I think people are much more open to just talking about it. And I think some people are getting angry about it. They're getting angry that it's being treated differently than a heart disease or a cancer illness. And they're starting to stand up for themselves. And that is a very, very key item that we need. And we need to get everybody on board and contacting their legislative body to try and get some really good positive changes to take place.
Do you see any legislation that's been proposed or some that's passed that encourages you?
Well, I'm really encouraged by Senator Murphy's bill, and there's you know, discussion going on. They're trying to bring together the both sides of both parties' bills and merge them together. I know National NAMI, I think, is working hard trying to be a force there.
Specifically that bill, is that a change in the criminal justice system when it comes to mental health?
Well, what it is, it's actually representing that they take away some of the liberties of individuals as far as being able to get them committed more easily. Right now, it's supposedly if they're a threat to themselves or others, and that is such a vague thing, and it's so skirted around. Our son needed a long-term commitment to be properly diagnosed and for him to even see the results of medication, for him to be safe to himself and to the rest of us. And so there's certain individuals, it's rare, but there's certain individuals that need that. And right now it's next to impossible to get that to happen. And that's one of the key components of that bill.
Where is your son, Mark, now? He's imprisoned.
He is at the Iowa Medical and Classification Center in Coralville.
How often do you get to visit him?
We go visit him at least every couple months. His world doesn't change a whole lot, so he would prefer. We are so blessed in the state of Iowa that we can email to him, so we communicate, you know, on a weekly basis at least, if not more, and just stay up with him on an email basis. But then we go to visit him, and it's just been wonderful to see when his meds are correct and balanced, he is being very productive, and he has gotten into his art. He plays guitar. He reads college-level textbooks. He's been very active and very busy there at the center.
How does he view what he did in 2009, killing Ed Thomas?
Absolutely abhors what he did. He is very, very sorry about what he did. And he has related that to Dave and I several times. Mm-hmm. That how sorry he is. And he said, I was so wrong. But he goes, it was so real and so right for me to do that. But I know now that I am thinking clear that was absolutely a crazy thing, he said.
Mm-hmm. He in his eyes at that time, he was doing a heroic deed. And,
oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm, and
absolutely.
You and your husband were also to be killed. Is that how?
Yes. Yes.
How much contact have you had with the family of the man he shot, Ed Thomas?
Their family is in our community, and they are very involved with the school. Being as far as Aaron teaches, they all Aaron and Todd both have children. Jan's very busy with her grandkids, and we're so thankful that she has her sons and her grandchildren in the community. We don't get to the school as much anymore because our sons have all graduated, and we are taking time to just be with our sons. However, nothing has changed as far as them being very, very cordial to us and then likewise us to them. We have communicated and had the opportunity to communicate on a personal basis. And one thing Jan and I, and her boys too, we all have the same mindset that yes, this was a tragedy, but we can take this tragedy and we can speak out and try and make the system better. We can try and make our world better by using this as an example. And I guess the real tragedy would be is if we chose to sit back and not try and make a difference.
Joan Becker, you'll be giving a talk about your family's journey with a mental illness tonight at 6:30 at the Ankeny United Methodist Church in Ankeny. What are your feelings about bringing this into the faith community, into a church, and making sure that a church has a mental health dimension?
Oh, it's just so near and dear to my heart because it's something, where is the first place we all go when we are dealing with a crisis or something like this? You want to be able to go and share or get advice from your church elders, the deacons, the pastor. And, you know, that is such an unfair thing, burden to place on those individuals who might not have had the kind of training to know how to respond to these types of situations. So I think this is just a phenomenal organization that has been formed, and it's been something in my heart that I would like to see set up all over our state, all over our country, so that these individuals, they might start with their counselors, but then those counselor or their pastor, the pastor or the deacons or whoever in the church could direct them on to those who have the education and the know-how to help these individuals.
Pat George, not much time, but how unique is your church in offering these services and raising this awareness?
I'm thinking we're pretty unique because we're hearing from churches all over the metro asking for help how they can begin something like this.
Okay, well, we wish you well in that endeavor, and thank you so much for joining us. Pat George, co-director of Mental Health Ministries at Ankeny United Methodist Church, part of an effort at that church to integrate more mental health into their ministry. Thank you, Pat.
You're welcome.
And thanks to Joan Becker, a mental health advocate. We appreciate you sharing the story of your family's journey through mental health. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up in our second half hour, I'll talk with Drake University's athletic director, Sandy Hatfield Club. She was in Washington, D.C. yesterday. We'll talk about what that was about. Also, English professor Craig Owens. They'll tell us how intercollegiate sports and the college classroom can learn from each other. That's in our second half hour. After a short break, this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.